in this exploration of the conditions that support the movement towards liberation. There is this understanding, as I think we talked about earlier, of there being a kind of a natural following one to the next, to the next. The arising of faith is a supportive condition for the arising of delight, which supports joy. And so there is this understanding of a natural unfolding, a lawful unfolding of these conditions. And yet, in this first part of the chain, it's not just about settling back and letting something happen. It takes some work. That work is very much the work of being present, being mindful, being aware, cultivating the capacity to meet our experience with the understanding of what supports us to move in the direction of letting go of greed, aversion, delusion, what supports us in moving towards the cultivations of happiness, tranquility, joy, concentration. And so there is some work to be done. At a certain point in this chain, it shifts from being cultivating the conditions to realizing the fruits of the practice. We're not there quite yet in our discussions. And so looking at this interesting aspect of conditions that are supportive and supporting, building, growing on each other, and yet still needing to take some action, do some work. Gil pointed, I think it was this morning, but also in his talk last night, around how just recognizing, beginning to recognize the little bits of some of these qualities. He pointed to that little nest in the waterfall. Just, you know, recognizing that little bit of tranquility is also a supportive condition for helping it to grow. This is in general true of these qualities, these beautiful qualities, that as we turn our mindful attention to the beginnings of our experience of them, it cultivates the conditions for them to strengthen. And so each of these factors supports itself when met with mindfulness. So that seeing of that, oh, this is tranquility. In the midst of all of this turmoil of whatever is arising, oh, this is tranquility. And so it helps to have a sense or an understanding of maybe a little description of what these qualities are and where we might meet them, where we might find them, so that we can begin to turn to them, to appreciate them, which in turn also supports their cultivation. So happiness, tranquility is the supporting condition for happiness. This quality too is supported by recognizing it. What is it? What is this happiness? In this particular list, the word being translated as happiness is sukha. which is also understood as pleasant mental feeling. So that's the kind of experience of it. Sometimes it's described using some of the same words Gil used for tranquility yesterday: contentment, well-being. Sometimes I think happiness is, I mean, it's a great word. Happiness is a great word, and yet sometimes we carry certain ideas about what happiness is from our usual context of happiness. And this is maybe a slightly different experience. There's an analogy that's offered maybe in the commentaries. I don't know if it's in the suttas, that may help us kind of distinguish these various aspects of delight, joy, happiness. And the analogy is of a traveler in the desert. Imagine you're traveling in the desert and you haven't had water in a long time. And you see somebody coming towards you. And that person says, just over that ridge, there's an oasis. There's water and there are trees. It's cool there. You can get some refreshment. Hearing that news brings delight. That joy of the possibility for refreshment. So you hear that news and it comes with some delight. That's like that delight, that first delight. Here, based on faith, based on the understanding, there's a possibility for freedom. A delight can arise. And then you make the work, you take the steps, you have to make some effort to get over the ridge to the oasis. Like you have to make the effort to connect to your experience, meet your experience. And you arrive at the oasis and you drink the water. And there is that joy. There's a joy of arriving and tasting it and being there with it, having that nourishment right then and there after you've been so parched. That's like the joy, the rapture of when the work, the effort to practice has shown us what it's like when, for the first time, the hindrances fall away. We've experienced for ourselves that taste. And then this happiness, this contentment, and said it's like having drunk from the pool, lying down in the shade of the trees and resting. Content. No need to reach out for anything. This is like happiness, this sukha, pleasant mental feeling. It's the settledness of no longer needing to reach out. The mind feels content, settled, not needing to reach out for the next hit of sense experience. It's been a sense of things as they are just fine. No need to change what's here. So it has a settledness to it, which It's kind of why I think, you know, the movement between rapture goes through tranquility to happiness. So the rapture, the PT, the joy, it's said in some of the texts that joy does include this mental pleasure. And yet the joy also has a kind of an energy or an exuberance or a movement to it that can perhaps keep us from really touching into this subtler level of, like Gil was talking about, you know, the mind just stilling and spreading. So the tranquility allows that energy to settle so that we can actually recognize the mental pleasantness, the mental pleasant feeling. So there's an understanding that sukha, that mental pleasant feeling, can be present when rapture is present. It's not that rapture ends and sukha begins, but that the tranquility supports the mind to be able to touch into that stiller place of sweetness, contentment, well-being. And it is also understood that this sweetness, this mental pleasant feeling, can be present without rapture. So rapture can fall away, that joy, that energetic quality can fall away, and we are left with this very sweet state. When describing this experience, while it's described in the text as mental pleasure, most people that I've talked to also experience this in some way through the body. It can be described as a pervading sense of well-being in the body. I've had the experience of it feeling like all my cells were pointed in the same direction. Just a visceral sense of alignment and just very aligned, oriented, and pleasant in that state. Sometimes it feels like, yes. Oh, yes. So sweet, so sweet. So this happiness of this, in this place in the chain of liberative dependent origination, is intimately connected with letting go. It's not connected with moving, leaning out, trying to get, trying to create, trying to construct. It really is a contentment, an ease, a happiness that comes when the mind is settled back, not reaching out, recognizing a contentment with comes at recognizing there's no need to pick anything up. So this kind of pleasure related to letting go is related to the purification of mind, to the mind free from hindrances. It's a form of pleasure that surpasses. That's the word that was. I was looking for another word, but couldn't find one. It surpasses any form of sense pleasure. Think of the best form of sense pleasure. This happiness of sukha is more kind of deeply satisfying in a way than that, than the happiness of sense pleasure. And the happiness of sense pleasure is often mixed with some kind of dukkha. It's mixed with leaning towards something that we want or leaning into the experience of being able to control our environment, or it's associated with the getting, the having, the moment when we get something. There is a happiness to that, in that moment when we wanted something, we want to have something that we like, we lean into it, we take some action, we do things, we get it. In that moment of having, in that moment of getting, of picking up, there is a moment of, happiness, partly because we have the thing that we wanted, in a moment of sense, again, of control, of being in association with what we like, and being able to have the things that we want. So we get that moment of happiness. And a large part of that happiness, which we're not so aware of, in our usual way of going around the world looking for things to make us happy, a large part of that happiness comes because for a moment the wanting has gone away. For a moment that wanting has been released, and we are free for just a moment from that wanting as we have something. And yet this happiness in this cycle knows of no other way to get happy other than to want something else so that we can have that, so that we can get rid of the feeling of wanting. So this happiness, this sukha happiness, is about understanding it's the letting go of the wanting, the release from that craving, brings this delight, this happiness, this pleasant experience, this mental pleasure, sweetness, contentment, well-being. And so the happiness of sense pleasure often comes with this, with a kind of craving and a wanting. And so it's right embedded in the usual way that we go around happiness. We've already got some agitation. And so the happiness of non-craving, of that letting go, doesn't have that agitation. It's smoother. It's got that settled quality of resting after having had the water at the oasis. Now, I do want to mention, because some of you may be thinking or recognizing that, you know, as the mind settles, it does seem at times like simple sense pleasure is heightened. You know, as the mind becomes very tranquil, you take a bite of tofu, you know, and it's like, wow, that's pretty amazing. All the different textures and tastes, and wow, I didn't know tofu had so many flavors to it. Or, as I think I said the other day, you walking along the path, you see a bit of color on the path, it's a piece of trash, and it's like, wow, That's amazing. These are pleasures that are coming through recognizing experience of the senses. But I think the pleasure and the delight that come with that, the happiness that comes with that, isn't so much about the thing itself. It's more about the intimacy, the presence, the actual being there with, to be present for experience as it comes. So sometimes as the mind settles down, we can kind of be surprised by the things that we find delightful. It's like, wow, a piece of trash. So there are, there's this happiness of our usual way of going about the around the world. But we may begin through this practice of meditation, through exploring being here, begin to taste little bits of this different kind of happiness, different kind of way of being in the world, and taste a few times this releasing from craving and feel the ease that comes with that. And we see that this is a greater kind of happiness. This is from the Dhammapada. If by giving up a lesser happiness, one could experience greater happiness, a wise person would renounce the lesser to behold the greater. I think we'd all agree with that. That if there is a greater form of happiness to be found, that would be, and we had to let go of the lesser one to get there, that we might be willing to do that. And yet, this is part of the work. If you are trying to get to some kind of peak of happiness, and all you know is the happiness of sense pleasure. It's like you're climbing mountains, right? You're climbing in the mountains, and you're trying to reach the top of the mountains, the highest point, and it's kind of cloudy, and so you see a peak, and you get to the top of that peak, and you're looking all around, and it's like, well, I think I'm at the top here. And then the clouds clear, and you see there's another peak that's higher. In order to get to that higher peak, you have to let go of the peak you're on. You have to do the work. You actually have to go down to get up often. You have to go down to further go higher. So it's likely, very likely, that in the letting go of our usual orientation to happiness, even after having tastes, you know, it's almost like, sometimes it's kind of like we're holding on back here. It's like, oh, you know, I just can't quite let go of that normal way of being happy. And yet we have a little taste out here. And it's more like we want this to have a really solid base before we commit to letting go of that one. So even having a little taste, it's sometimes really hard. It's hard to let go of that habit. And so over and over again, we find ourselves caught back in that pattern of trying to get what we want. We even bring that pattern into our meditation. We have a taste of a delightful state, and then it's like, oh yeah, that's good. Let me get that again. So there's going to be some effort to continue to notice those times when we revert to our usual way of trying to get what we want, reaching out, having that craving as part of the picture, and reorient our path and our approach to happiness to one of of ethics, of renunciation, of letting go. So there are different ways we might touch into this kind of happiness as we practice to begin to get this taste, these little tastes, so that we can, like with the description of tranquility, we can begin to as we experience small bits of this kind of happiness of letting go, taking it in. It's like letting yourself be nourished by that, like the traveler in the desert. Let yourself be nourished by that happiness. It will create conditions that will orient the mind in that direction to support its further growth. So I wanted to just talk about some different ways that this kind of happiness can be touched into. And the first, the most classic way that this happiness is described is with respect to concentration. This happiness of at this point in the path of dependent, liberative dependent origination is said to be the happiness of what's called access concentration, this point where the hindrances have fallen away and the mind is gathered, it's stable, it's able to meet experience without reactivity. So this happiness, it's interesting with these factors here. They both, the delight, I mean the joy, the rapture, and the sukha, the happiness, are both qualities that support the arising of concentration and are further supported by the development of concentration. So again, we have these feedback loops for these qualities in the path of practice. So concentration, there's the concentration of, and much of the way we often think of concentration is when we connect to one experience. We connect to the breath, for example, and let the attention stabilize on the breath. The mind becomes very still. The breath becomes very still. There's a lot of stillness, a lot of unification of mind around the breath. There's some factors that come together, five factors, that support this unification. Five factors of mind that are used to help create the concentration and are strengthened and stabilized in the concentration. These five factors are, let's say them in the Pali and in the English, vitakka, the directing or aiming of the attention, vichara, the sustaining of the attention. This is a lot of the work in our practice, directing our attention to experience with mindfulness, that directing, choosing, that can be the recognition of what mindfulness is aware of. It doesn't necessarily have to be that there's a conscious choice of an object, but there is that recognition of this is what mindfulness is aware of right now. This is the connection. It's the connecting with an experience with mindfulness. The second vichara is the sustaining of that mindfulness. In one-pointed concentration, like picking with the breath, it is the sustaining of the attention on that experience of the breath. That connecting and sustaining of the attention on the breath creates the conditions for more continuity of mindfulness, and the mind begins to kind of orient around that object and likes the object. It starts to get really comfortable with that breath and starts to feel the pleasantness of the breath and gets very happy. This is the third factor, joy, rapture. And then the pleasant feeling also coming with that very strongly, the pleasantness of that. So there's both the energy and the intentionality of connecting and sustaining the attention, the delightful energy of the rapture and the pleasantness. And then there's also a fifth quality of, it's often called one-pointedness, ekagata. That movement into the object to really penetrate, connect with the experience of the breathing. And in the one-pointed awareness, it is that penetrating, connecting over time creates a very strong stability of the mind. And so this part of the path of transcendent dependent origination, the next link is concentration. And so this part of the path classically is understood to really be the supportive conditions for the development, the strengthening of concentration. In particular, this kind of one-pointed concentration classically in the teachings. There is also another form of concentration that comes with, not with the stability of attention on a particular experience, but the stability of attention itself. It's the mind being undisturbed, able to stay present for whatever arises. This is called momentary concentration. Moment to moment, the mind meets experience and is present. It is really, one definition for concentration is this continuity of mindfulness, whether on one object like the breath or on a multiplicity of experience. The same five factors of concentration come into play in both forms of concentration. This sukha, this happiness, is strong in both forms. And so while the classical definitions emphasize the perhaps the one-pointed or jhanic concentration at this point, I think we can also explore what it means to have the happiness around this open kind of awareness, this what's called in the texts momentary concentration or kanika samadhi, moment-to-moment concentration. It can get very powerful and very strong, this moment-to-moment concentration. This is the kind of concentration, this is essentially access concentration, this access concentration, a place of all of the unification of these five factors of concentration. Very strong, very stable, all five are there. And at that point, there can kind of be a choice of does the mind kind of choose to move into one experience and stabilize more and more, move more and more to stillness? Or does the mind get interested in noticing change? So the exploration of mindfulness practice is this exploration of noticing change. The ability to notice change, the ability to meet the multiplicity of experience without being buffeted around by it, is really supported by this stability. by these factors of connecting, sustaining, of the joy and the happiness and the ability to know this is what's happening. This is what's happening. This kind of concentration, this access concentration, which can be directed to noticing change, a lot of happiness can come in that place in our practice, too. So the concentration is kind of the classical definition, but I'd also like to explore some other ways that we might find this kind of happiness. Gil's been pointing to this too, the way that just as we engage in practice, as we can connect, and even when things are we're struggling, even when we're in the midst of a episode of frustration or reactivity, when we can orient to, oh, I can be mindful of this. I can be attentive to this. There's enough stability of mind to recognize this is something that's happening. This is just frustration happening in the mind. As we can do that, as that's possible, sometimes there's the kind of recognition of the practice itself in a way, and a joy in, yes, this is possible. A happiness, a pleasantness can come in, a joy, a delight, a pleasantness that can come in, even as something really challenging is happening, as we connect to the possibility for being present with our experience. We can see a turning of the mind, a kind of a 45-degree shift of, you know, we're caught in something. There's an experiencing happening and we're resisting it. And we believe that with that resistance, we need to do something. We have to fix it. We have to change it. But then suddenly we, through just meeting experience, it's like, oh, right, resistance. This thing is happening and resistance is happening. I can meet that resistance. The belief in the resistance, the idea that I have to do something about it, releases. And there's a kind of a happiness in that release. So this is one of the ways to touch into the moments of happiness. In exploring your experience, there will be moments when you notice a particular tightening or clinging or holding, release, even if only for a moment, it lets go. If you are present, if you are interested in that letting go itself, there will be a happiness there. The release from clinging or craving, as the mind releases it, there's a very natural arising of happiness. So right in the practice, right in the midst of it seeming like no possibility for happiness here, there can be these little points, little tastes. This is the happiness of letting go. It's like a pointer. It's pointing us in that direction. It's informing us. This is the direction. I think we feel the well-being, too, of that letting go. And the mind orients. I think this is part of the way the practice happens. This is how it kind of organically works, that as we are present for the happiness of letting go, the well-being that arises there, it's like the organism recognizes, yeah, that's the way towards truer happiness. That's the way towards deeper happiness. And as we notice how, you know, the clinging and wanting things to be different, we feel the tightness of that, we feel the contraction of that, the mind recognizes, oh, maybe not. Maybe that's not the direction of happiness. And so witnessing this whole mess, witnessing the contraction, witnessing the tightening, witnessing the sense of contentment and release and well-being that comes as the contraction lets go, all of that is like an education for our organism, our mind. And the our organism kind of naturally gravitates towards well-being when it gets good information. And it gets, when it meets the truth, it knows the truth. Maybe a more subtle form of happiness that we can touch into is the happiness of not suffering. There's a lot of these moments around, and we don't often actually appreciate them too much. I think we more find, the highs when things feel really good. We think that's right, and when things feel really bad, it's like, well, that's bad. It's like we orient around the highs and the lows, and when things are kind of flat in the middle, no particular problem, we go looking for, well, where's the next hit, or what's the next thing that I'm going to go for? It's hard to orient to this place of no problem, nothing much happening here. Imagine, imagine that you have think about how you feel about, you know, just how you are walking around. You know, just getting up and walking out of here. You know, there may not be a lot of sense of delight and happiness around just the possibility of getting up and walking out of here. And yet imagine that you have a broken leg. So you've got this broken leg, and it's quite a bit more effort to get up and, you know, get your crutches and maneuver your way through all the zabutons and zafus and get yourself out of the door and make sure nobody's, you know, wait till people are gone. And just the kind of, you know, standing in the line, getting your food, how do you balance the plate with your crutches, and, you know, not to speak of the pain of the leg itself. And then imagine in a flash that cast is gone, that broken leg is gone, and you're able to move freely. There might be some sense of ease and delight and happiness in that contrast. This is pointing to the happiness of non-suffering. It's a subtle form of happiness. So when there's no particular problem, maybe it feels a little flat, or maybe it just feels like nothing's happening. Explore the possibility that no problem is actually a really nice place to be. What does it feel like when nothing's particularly wrong? And how does your body feel? Is it relaxed? Is there calmness? Again, this is a pointer to some of the happiness that can be there in small, kind of unexamined, or ways that we're not usually conscious of. May be there, but not recognized. May be possible to highlight the happiness of non-suffering. And then there's a happiness that can come with as we really meet experience in this space of moment-to-moment concentration. The mind is very stable with moment-to-moment concentration, able to really see what's happening. There's a recognition of the flow of changing experience, a real recognition of the impermanent nature of experience, the unreliable nature of experience, the out-of-control nature of experience. On the surface of it, that doesn't sound like very good news. And yet the mind that's very stable can meet that, understand that this is the way it is. Stops fighting these truths. Kind of comes into alignment with the truth of the way things are. Stops resisting, trying to fight the flow of impermanence. Trying to find something that would be reliable. Something, isn't there something out there? This terrain of insight goes really deep clinging around just not wanting these truths to be true. It's like we have to recognize at different levels, oh yeah, that's impermanent. But then the mind will go, oh, but maybe this. And we kind of settle into something and, well, that feels pretty good. I can control the practice. I can meet things as they are. And then suddenly we find out, well, maybe not always. And so a deeper level of letting go has to happen. And we watch this process over and over again. The poor mind looking for something. Oh, isn't there something out there that I can hold on to? Isn't there something reliable? At one point in a retreat a couple years ago, I was watching the mind do just this. It would search, it would want to find something. And I was the recognition at that point in the practice was I couldn't stop this movement. It was coming from such a deep level. Oh, it was just almost like this animal level of, isn't there something out there where I can be like still for a minute? Isn't there something that'll help me be okay for just a couple seconds? And so there was this movement at a very deep level. And I knew, I mean, some part of my mind knew, you know, no. No, there's nothing out there. And yet, what the practice involved at that point was really just saying, search away, try to find something, go ahead, I'll be right here with you. I'll be right here with you while this search happens. And so there was a kind of an ease in that. Oh, isn't there something there? So there was that again, just that settled back place of, it's okay, this is what the mind is doing. The mind has to, like, exhaust all possibilities. Just exhaust them before it's really willing to let go. And so there was this kind of, actually it was kind of sweet, you know, to watch the mind, like, oh, isn't there something? It's like this little rabbit finding something. every now and then it would actually find something that was peaceful for a little while, and find a place that it could rest for a few moments. And there would be this little bit of, ah, that's nice. And then that would fall apart. That. And there was a deeper happiness in that. Watching that fall apart. And then it would do it again. There's got to be something. It's like, okay, you know, just like over and over and over and over again. Watching this, learning, understanding about, over and over again, seeing the deeper happiness of not trying to hold on, and yet some part of the mind going, but there's got to be. So this practice, we do get tastes of this happiness. We get tastes of that. And over time, the mind aligns more and more with the truth. At different levels, as I said, different levels of that, the mind can understand, yeah, unreliable, impermanent, out of control. And there's more ease, more happiness, more peace in life in that kind of domain. And then there's a deeper learning, a deeper letting go. And so we align ourselves with the truth at deeper and deeper and deeper levels, and a deep happiness. It's like there's almost an inherent happiness in this alignment. The mind knows it's not fighting reality anymore. It's not trying to do what's not possible. So finding, recognizing, we construct the conditions for the possibility for happiness to arise. Now, happiness isn't actually something we do. It is something that arises based on conditions and the conditions we've talked about. The confidence and the engagement and the meeting of experience and seeing how we can not be so caught, how letting go happens. So happiness arises. It's not something we say, I'm going to have mental pleasure now and flip a switch. So it arises when conditions are right. And yet the recognition of when it arises, and so part of my hope here for this exploration is to point out to you some of the ways or places you might recognize it in your practice. Because that very recognition of this mental happiness, this mental pleasant experience, will further support its deepening, its expanding, its suffusing, its moving to really that experience of contentment and well-being. Let's sit for a moment. This sweetness of well-being. Mm.